We now move a short time forward and from Italy to England to the second ruler in our catalogue of the great minds. Now, normally one would expect that a ruler, a head of state, started off with immense advantages in life, power, inherited wealth, automatic command. But in this particular case, the fact that the person concerned was a potential ruler in fact constituted an immense and very early health hazard to that person. Tony, who was it?
This person, this reigning monarch, this extraordinary genius, was a very fine legal brain, was known as exceptionally courageous, was an accomplished musician, similarly an accomplished linguist, was a renowned leader, was a brilliant orator, a superb and real psychologist, and a renowned mental athlete. And this monarch was Queen Elizabeth I. Extraordinary genius. In fact, during her reign, art, literature, science, and the military flourished as they had almost never done before, except perhaps in the time of the Greek and Italian Renaissances. Just some names that she, if you like, provided the environment so that they themselves could express their different geniuses. Listen to these. Sir Philip Sidney, Francis Bacon, Christopher Marlowe, Edmund Spenser, who actually wrote that gigantic and famous poem, The Faerie Queen, about Queen Elizabeth I.
Absolutely.
She inspired art, literature, everything. Others, Sir Walter Raleigh, Francis Drake, Lord Grenville, Edmund de Vere, and another fairly well-known chap called Bill, William Shakespeare, all flourished in her reign. Now, it was extraordinary because historically it was different. And Ray, you know a lot about that particular period. Could you comment on what she did that was so different from what other great rulers had done before and after her?
The fascinating thing about Elizabeth is that if you look at her reign, although it is extremely turbulent, in fact it represented a kind of oasis between two sets of very lengthy civil wars. Now, her grandfather, King Henry VII, had actually come to power after the Wars of the Roses, which lasted about 50 years. And after her, the Stuarts, King James I, King Charles I, immediately the country was plunged straight back into civil war again. So you can see her genius at holding in check and balance all the different warring factions, the turbulences that were besetting England at that time.
Yes.
Of course, her father, Henry VIII, was the very first Protestant King of England. Everyone had been Roman Catholic before. Henry broke with the Roman Catholic Church. He was, of course, excommunicated by the Pope. All the Catholic forces of Europe, especially the Spanish, who were the absolute leaders of the Catholic world, ganged up on poor Elizabeth.
Yes.
She had to circumvent this incredible minefield. For example, you know, Catholics in the north of England continued plotting against her, Mary, Queen of Scots, trying to take the throne, the Spanish lording gigantic armadas against her.
Right.
Plots, subterfuge, everything. You know, she had to. She was like walking on a tightrope, a balancing act, for almost 50 years as sovereign between different persuasions, religious beliefs, politics. And even when the Spanish launched this armada in 1588, this gigantic naval fleet to overwhelm the country and depose her as queen, normally a king or queen can rely on all the subjects in the realm to say, well, here come the foreign hordes, we'll beat them off. But a good two-thirds to a half of her subjects were actually Roman Catholics anyway. They hadn't changed.
Yes, yes.
So where on earth did she stand? So, you know, by the force of her personality, by brilliant oratory to the troops at Tilbury, by creating herself as an icon, recreating herself as almost a replacement for the Virgin Mary, by brilliant clothes, wonderful ruffs, incredibly imposing personality and charisma, she managed to unite all the strands of English society in a cohesive way that fought off these foreign challenges and kept her in place. But it's like ducking and weaving in a football match. I mean, it's just absolutely incredible, you know, grabbing the ball, holding it, being attacked from the right, attacked from the left, but eventually getting there.
Yes. I mean, she was a brilliant thinker throughout, wasn't she? And she also was known as the Virgin Queen, which was actually another one of her great strengths, because she was an incredibly sensual, very sexual woman. She loved the texture of clothes, she designed things, and she was the, if you like, the apple of the eye of all the great men of her time. And she played them like a chess match as well.
Oh, yes,
realizing, yeah. Because, I mean, she realized that childbirth and marriage would be catastrophic for her reign. So she actually had this such enormous commitment, if you like, this vision for her country, this vision to create the Renaissance of art, to allow literature to flourish, to allow science to investigate the universe, and to allow, of course, the military to build the empire. Total, absolute personal commitment, while displaying at the same time some of those extraordinary characters that we discussed in terms of types of intelligence. I mean, a verbal intelligence almost unheard of, a numerical and a calculating intelligence. She was exceptionally creative, designing her own clothes. Her interpersonal intelligence, her ability to actually have all those different factions adore her, a staggering accomplishment on multiple levels. And her planning ability, I mean, as you say, these minefields that she negotiated for that long period, at the same time as, if you like, fighting all those battles, building this intellectual oasis for the world and for the flourishing of culture, extraordinary accomplishment, and all, in a sense, on her own.
Yes, I think that one of the things about childbirth, this is really important. Nowadays, in the 20th century, childbirth is a doddle. There's no real problem. I mean, it can be painful, it can be difficult, but essentially it is, by and large, not life-threatening. In the 16th century, quite often it was life-threatening. Hygiene was rudimentary. The surgeons and doctors didn't fully understand the nature of the bacteria and microbes that could cause infections. And if you wanted to stay queen, having a child was one sure way of either terminating your resistance very early or creating a rival for yourself as the son perhaps grew up.
Yes.
And she had this intense, I think, private dialogue with herself, the ability to know precisely what she wanted. As she realised that she was the best possible thing for the country, she was the Virgin Queen, replacing the Virgin Mary. And it took incredible self-restraint in a time when contraceptives were completely unknown,
yes,
to avoid sexual entanglements. I mean, she was the apple of everybody's eye in Europe, as you, yes, quite rightly say. Any prince, Ivan the Terrible, proposed marriage to her four times, Tsar Ivan the Terrible of Moscow, and was most annoyed when she turned him down. But that was typical. They were all queuing up to marry Elizabeth I of England.
Yes, and she had the pick of anybody she wanted, and still she kept that vision and she kept that commitment. I mean, extraordinary things. In his marvellous book on Elizabeth I, entitled The Virgin Queen, The Personal History of Elizabeth I, Christopher Hibbert ends his book in the following way. The glories of her reign were once more attributed to her own genius, and such was the power of her extraordinary personality, the strength of her allure, that they are still seen so today. In fact, she's one of the few people in the history of the world to have an entire age named after her. The Elizabethan age is Queen Elizabeth. So on this macrocosmic level, she is a giant. But on the, if you like, the more popular, the more quote-unquote common level, who is good Queen Bess? That's
Queen Elizabeth.
Everybody loved and adored her. And just to end, we'll talk about the poem by Christopher Marlowe, the playwright of her time, in which he is talking about the nurturing of genius and the flowering of that in Elizabeth. He says, "Nature, that framed us of four elements, warring within our breasts for regiment, doth teach us all to have aspiring minds. Our soul, whose facilities and faculties can comprehend the wondrous architecture of the world and measure every wandering planet's course, still climbing after knowledge infinite and always moving as the restless spheres, wills us to wear ourselves and never rest until we reach the ripest fruit of all, that perfect bliss and soul felicity, the sweet fruition of an earthly crown." Queen Elizabeth I, an amazing genius.